I've invited Scott Ritter back onto the show. Last time he was on was about 3 months ago when his book Target Iran came out. Since then, there has been a lot more talk about Iran. The president brought it up, of course, in his State of the Union address last week. Yesterday, the Senate was having hearings, and senators of both parties were talking about a drift towards war with Iran and expressed some concern about us going to Iran. Our CBS News foreign affairs consultant Pamela Falk was watching when the senators were talking yesterday and sums up some of what they had to say.
What they are trying to do is make sure that the U.S. is not heading for another military confrontation. Most senators are trying to say, let's not confront Iran militarily. The administration has said they will confront the Iranians, any kind of Iranian militias in Iraq. And it's widening the focus in many ways, in a way that people are worried. You've got a chorus of voices really saying, don't do this. Don't do it at this time. Because there's also a lot of people say, there are people saying, why don't you just negotiate, try diplomacy.
Obviously, there are many people who believe that the Bush administration is inching us, if inching is the right word, towards some sort of confrontation with Iran. Scott Ritter, welcome back to KMOX.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure having you on the show. Are we closer to war with Iran now than last time you and I spoke 3 months ago?
Absolutely. When we spoke last time, I think I said that, you know, there wasn't going to be an October surprise. People who were looking for a strike to take place, you know, before the election were looking in vain. And I articulated that there certain conditions had to exist before the United States could strike. One would be, you know, the accumulation of military might in the region. We see that happening. The second would be the United States negotiating basing rights for logistical support of sustained airstrikes. We see this now with bases being reported already negotiated in Romania and Bulgaria for long-range bombers. And then we needed to see the president make a move domestically, and we've seen that with the State of the Union address and the continued warlike rhetoric coming out of the White House. So, you know, I think that we live in very dangerous times. This is a White House that is inclined towards military action with Iran, and it's a White House that has made it clear that they seek to wrap up the Iran problem before they leave office.
Lieutenant General Raymond Odierno, who of the U.S. Army, said yesterday in an interview with USA Today that Iran is supplying Iraqi militias with a variety of powerful rockets. He talked about RPGs and Katyusha rockets and roadside bombs. He says, we have weapons that we know through serial numbers trace back to Iran. At the same time, we have the London-based International Institute for Strategic Studies saying that Iran is 2 to 3 years away from having the capacity to build a nuclear weapon. Are these things that the United States, A, should be concerned about, and B, should be acting on?
Well, of course the United States should be concerned about an Iranian nuclear weapon if, in fact, one could be demonstrated to exist, or a program to exist that is, you know, heading in that direction. But you know, people keep throwing out these numbers. I've dealt with London think tanks before. I've dealt with American think tanks before, back in the day when we talked about Saddam's nuclear capability. And we were told Saddam was 6 months away, a year away, 3 years away, 5 years away. But, you know, there was a program, and no one provided any evidence to sustain that rhetoric. I make the same charge today regarding Iran. I'm tired of hearing people talk about how Iran is on the verge of a nuclear weapons program, whether it be 6 months, as Nicholas Burns, you know, a senior State Department official, has alleged. Sometimes John Bolton, the former ambassador, used to talk about, you know, they're on the cusp of having a nuclear weapon. Or it's 5 years, 10 years, as some intelligence agencies talk about. The bottom line is that Iran hasn't been shown to have a nuclear weapons program. They have a nuclear energy program that contains an element related to the enrichment of uranium that has dual use capabilities, meaning that if you perfect this technology, you could use that technology as part of an overall nuclear weapons program. But there's two things at stake here, or that are key here. One, they haven't perfected the technology. The IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors, who are still in Iran today as we speak, have come out and said that they're surprised about the slow pace of progress that the Iranians are making, that it appears the centrifuges they are using are falling apart every time they plug them in through a combination of bad ball bearings and, you know, corrupt gas, the uranium hexafluoride that they inject into it. This is the reality that we're dealing with. So I think we need to take a huge step backwards and say, well, wait a minute now. What are we talking about here? You know, and then we have Odierno talking about, you know, the Iranian threat. You know, the United States has supported a Shia-backed government that's inclusive of an element known as the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq or Syria, who has a military arm called the Badr Brigade. We facilitated the entry of the Badr Brigade, many thousands strong, from Iran into Iraq in 2003-2004. They were armed by Iran. So why is it now that we're screaming bloody murder, that we're finding weaponry with Iranian serial numbers on them inside Iraq? Odierno needs to stop this rhetoric and focus on the real problem in Iraq, which is not Iranian-backed Shia militias, but a Sunni insurgency that has gained the upper hand in Anbar province and in Baghdad. This is where the bulk of the fighting is taking place. To ratchet up the pressure on the Shia and the Iranians is just irresponsible and part and parcel of an overall irresponsible policy direction that has us slipping towards war with Iran.
I'm going to come back to the nuclear side of this in just a second, but let's talk a little bit more about Iran's role in Iraq right now. There are some, including the leadership of Saudi Arabia earlier today, calling for more involvement by Iran, which is funny to me because Saudi Arabia and Iran would seem to be on opposite sides of the Iraq question. But there are others who are also saying we need to get them involved. Is it possible for the Bush administration and the leadership in Iran to ever sit down at a table and talk about getting something peaceful going in Iraq?
Not until the Bush administration cease and desists on its policy of regime change. You know, that this, we need to understand that the Bush administration is not out to, you know, create the conditions for peace in the Middle East, at least through peaceful means. They have embarked on a policy that is written. It's not an assumed policy. It's not speculation. It is a written policy reflected in the National Security Strategy of the United States, most recently updated in March of 2006, where Iran is named 16 times as the number one threat to the national security of the United States. And the Bush administration has said that this situation cannot be resolved until which time this regime is removed from power. So if we're talking about sitting down and negotiating between the United States and Iran to create, you know, normalcy, stability in the Middle East, this implies with it the United States' acceptance as Iran under the regime of the mullahs as being a legitimate player in Middle East affairs. The Bush administration has rejected this premise. They say that Iran is an irresponsible player that must be eliminated. Until the Bush administration changes that fundamental premise in terms of how it deals with Iran, there's no chance of the United States and Iran sitting down. The Iranians are ready. They will sit down anytime, any place. The problem's on this side of the Atlantic.
Well, talking with former U.N. Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX, what do you envision, if it were to come about, Iran's role to be in Iraq?
Well, first of all, we need to understand the history of Iran in Iraq. You know, since the 1960s, I mean, some people can take it back centuries, even millennium. But since the 1960s, you know, it's been strained relations, especially you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, with the coming of the power of Saddam Hussein. The Shah of Iran and Saddam Hussein did not get along well. In the early 70s, the Shah of Iran used Iran's overwhelming force to pry a treaty that ceded the Shatel Arab waterways away from Iraqi sovereignty to Iran. This was one of the main reasons why Iraq, under Saddam Hussein, invaded Iran in the late 1970s. They, of course, had that terrible 8-year war where millions of people were killed and wounded. The Iranian regime left that war with their tail between their legs. They were beaten down to the ground. They weren't decisively defeated, but their nation was exhausted. And the Iranian premise is that with Saddam gone, and by the way, they think this is a good thing. A lot of Americans don't realize that there was celebrating in the street of Tehran when the United States invaded Iraq. The Iranians think this is a good thing. They thank us for getting rid of their arch enemy, Saddam Hussein. But what they want out of a U.S. occupation is a stable Iraqi government that will never again threaten Iran in the way that Saddam Hussein's government did. They're not seeing that with the current U.S.-led occupation. This is why the Iranians are very much interested in getting a government in place in Baghdad that is sympathetic and even friendly with the Iranians across the border. This is why they support the Shia. They are neighbors. Let's never forget this reality. We do not share a common border with Iraq. We're not even close. We have to travel thousands of miles to get to Iraq. Iraq and Iran live right next door to one another with a very difficult history. Iran has every right to be concerned about what's going on inside Iraq and to try and influence those developments. The United States finds this, uneasy because the Iranian influence, whether it be peaceful or otherwise, makes our occupation and our overall goals and objectives in the Middle East more difficult to achieve. And remember, it's not just about Iraq when it comes to the Bush administration. They have their eyes firmly set on Iran. So anything the Iranians are doing to create problems for the United States in Iraq makes it more difficult for the Bush administration to in turn hold Iran to account.
Scott, in a piece you published this week, you are urging Congress to hold real hearings on Iran. Those are your words, real hearings on Iran. What does that mean and to what end?
Well, we see a current debate taking place. Senator Spector, a Republican, has just come out. The president made a statement that he's the decider. I'm the one who gets to make the decision, he says. And many senators are sitting there reflecting back on the Constitution and said, well, wait a minute. Now, there's separate but equal branches of government here, and Congress has a role to play. I would say that recently, if you listen to the words of Chuck Hagel, another Republican from Nebraska, and other senators, Democrat and Republican alike, there's a growing recognition that Congress abrogated its responsibilities in a horrific fashion in the lead-up to the Iraq War. People are recognizing that simply accepting at face value the statements made by the executive branch about a threat to the United States of America, was not conducting the kind of oversight envisioned by the Constitution of the United States. There were hearings before Iraq. Joe Biden and Richard Lugar held this sham of a hearing. I condemned it when it occurred in July, August of 2002 on Iraq, that pretty much served as a rubber stamp platform for, greasing the skids for war with Iraq. They pretty much brought on all the yes men that they could and wouldn't allow anybody to provide testimony that was contrary to the popularly held belief that Saddam Hussein was rearming with weapons of mass destruction and represented a threat to the United States worthy of military intervention. I think we have to recognize that these mistakes were made, the mistakes were made by Congress, and that Congress needs to rectify this situation. And we, the people of the United States, need to ensure that Congress does that because, we don't have that many rights when it comes to, policy and influencing government. We have a lot of individual civil liberties and rights, but when it comes to actually influencing government, the biggest right we have is to elect representatives who will do our bidding, and then we must hold them to account. And if we don't put pressure on our Congress to hold the kind of constitutionally mandated hearings that provide genuine oversight of American policy, then we will stumble to war with Iran in the same fashion that we stumbled to war in Iraq.
Am I correct in saying that you're not opposed to going to war with Iran if a true threat is shown and we had enough evidence to back that up, but thus far we have not seen anything close to that?
I'm not a warmonger. I'm not somebody who beats the drums of war and says, let's go out and pull the gun first. I'm somebody who believes that war is the absolute last option. It's when we've exhausted every other venue to resolve an issue, only then do we go to war. But if need be, if a genuine threat to the national security of the United States exists, we go to war. And if Iran can be demonstrated to be such a threat, and we've exhausted every venue possible short of war to resolve this issue, then so be it. And believe me, my arm would go up and I'd leave the first wave across the beach if that had to be. But, Iran hasn't been demonstrated to be such a threat. We haven't exhausted every venue possible. I won't even believe we begin to start exhausting these venues until Condoleezza Rice gets on an airplane and flies to Tehran and meets with her Iranian counterparts. Remember this. James Baker met with Tariq Aziz in the weeks before the war with Iraq back in 1990, 1991. As much as we condemned Saddam Hussein's regime, before we went to war in 1991, our Secretary of State met with senior Iraqi government officials to resolve the differences. It didn't work out. We ended up going to war. But that's called diplomacy. That's called exhausting every option. The Bush administration's not even coming close.
Scott, a listener by the name of Eddie emails and asks, is the evidence coming out that Iran had a big hand in the kidnapping and murder of five U.S. soldiers in Karbala last week no big deal to you? Is their funding of Hezbollah and their expressed desire for nukes no big deal to you?
Well, first of all, if this is something that manifests itself in the threat as a threat to the United States, of course it's a big deal. But, you know, again, I'd advise your listener to read very carefully the news reports that he's referring to, because I've read them all. And unless this gentleman sits on the National Security Council or sits in the Pentagon and has access to firsthand information, he's relying on the news. And there's not a single news report that says anything other than suspicions are emerging that Iran might have played a role. That means nothing. And so, you know, I'm not someone to jump off the ship and say, let's swim to the beach and invade Iran right now because the media is speculating about something they know nothing about. You know, I'd like to see the facts first. On the funding of Hezbollah, you know, the United States funds a lot of organizations out there. Things are great, you know. The mere fact that Iran funds Hezbollah is of no concern to me. How does that manifest itself in a threat that warrants U.S. military action? What threat does Hezbollah pose to the United States of America? And don't bring up Israel. Hezbollah threatens Israel only when Israel threatens southern Lebanon. I mean, that's a problem Israel's going to have to deal with there. That's an Israeli-Lebanese problem. It's not an American problem.
Speaking of Israel, do you think that the pro-Israel lobby in this country is driving a lot of the sentiment towards Iran?
There can be no doubt about it. I mean, it's not what I think. It's what I read. It's what I see. It's what I hear. One only has to listen to the speeches, go to the AIPAC website, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Commission, or Committee. Take a look at their website. Read the articles they are posting. Read the position papers they put forward. Read the rhetoric coming from the Israeli government itself and tell me if it's anything other than pushing America towards military confrontation with Iran.
Let me ask you one last question about Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, because this is the guy that America is exposed to the most from that nation. He's a loudmouth, and he says a lot of things about his hatred of the West and America in particular. We hear that there are moderates in Iran who may eventually be able to take control of that nation. But in the meantime, they've got this guy in charge. How dangerous is he?
He's not dangerous at all to the United States. I mean, he says things that are reprehensible. He says things that are counterproductive. But I advise everybody who focuses on Iran to learn something about Iran before you go off and make Ahmadinejad your poster boy for demonization. The real power in Iran is held by the supreme leader, a gentleman named the Ayatollah Khamenei. There's a guardian council. There's an expediency council. These are the real instruments of governance in Iran today.
It's more a theocracy than a democracy by far, right?
It's only a democracy in terms of its election of a parliament and a president that are totally subordinated to this theocracy when it comes to military action, police state, etc. These are the people we have to be worried about. And the fact that they have reached out to us repeatedly in an effort to sit down and negotiate a settlement with the Bush administration, and the Bush administration has rejected every single outreach by the supreme leader, tells me that, you know, we still have a long way to go before we talk about going to war. There's still a lot of venues out there that need to be exhausted, namely diplomacy. If we really want to resolve this problem, if we're concerned about Hezbollah, if we're concerned about Iranian involvement in Iraq, why not send a delegation to meet with the supreme leader and say, hey, what's going on? What's on your agenda? What are you doing? You know, are you really trying to position yourself to be a threat to us, or are we just not reading you right? But as long as we continue to judge the tea leaves, so to speak, based upon our interpretation of Ahmadinejad, we're not even reading Iran right from the get-go.
Scott, as you know, I vehemently disagree with you on Hezbollah, but I respect your opinions on all the rest of these things, and you won't say it, so I will. You were right about Iraq before, during, and after, and you deserve a lot of credit for that, and I urge people to read your book for more information on Iran. It's called Target Iran. Scott Ritter, as always, thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much.
It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.